ones who love you so. Be a shoulder to cry on when you're in need. They'll never leave you alone, no.
When your friends bring you down
and they drag you through the dirt,
and when nobody's around,
they'll carry you through the hurt. Just remember that family comes. Just remember
again. What a joy and what excitement to be with you this Saturday morning as the month winds down. My name is Michael Mensah, and we are live here on Farm Life, your regular special family enrichment and engagement program meant to make us a better version of ourselves and for us to have thriving families and relationships. Once again, thank you for allowing us into your space, wherever that space is. And as always, we'll also be having another meaningful conversation. So stay tuned and don't go away yet. I just want us to hear this spot of music and we'll be right back. Yeah, welcome back. This is Farm Life, live here on City 97.3 FM. Today we are going to look at the conversation around benevolent love in relationships with special emphasis on marriage and family. So, what do we mean by benevolent love? How should it or will it function in a marriage relationship or family, and generally in relationships? So that's a conversation we're going to have. Before we get into the substance of it, the song we heard was by Ondie Badakoda, and I want to say something, a few things. That over the past week or two, or a little longer, we've had quite a number of special people pass on into eternity. Last week we laid to rest a younger sister of a good friend of mine, a wonderful woman in every way, wife and mother. And at the funeral, it was heartbreaking to see the children weeping because they know the consequences of being without a mom. And then we hear of the passing of Koda. So what I want to bring out is the element of the brevity of life, and how we need not take it for granted, and how we did not take those who have been granted to us as loved ones for granted. The quibblings, the fightings, the acrimony, and what have you. Because before you know too long, that person may not be. So let's let love reign, and let's do the best we can. And let's also think about the perspective of eternity. Where would that be for you and me? What do you believe? I believe that scriptures are right when they say that it's appointed unto man once to die and after judgment. And so sometimes it's worth considering. I ask this question. If it's right and you say it is not, and you get there and realize it's right, there's no coming back, what do you do? If it's not right and you do it and get there and realize it's not right, you have not lost a thing. So it's worth thinking through and giving yourself a sound grounding, having the perspective of eternity right here whilst we are alive, so we are guaranteed the life after, according to scriptures. And so that's my little food for thought this morning, as we delve into this dynamic of the benevolent love And I'll begin with a few things. Somebody says, each moment is an enjoyable adventure when we share love. Love allows flexibility in all ways while remaining as love. Our love is reassuring as we share it with others. Passionate about our love ensures we are compassionate with others. Martin Luther King Jr. said, let every man decide whether he will walk in the light of creative altruism or in the darkness of destructive selfishness. Mark Twain says that kindness is a language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. Mencio says that try your best to treat others as you'd wish to be treated yourself, and you find that this is the shortest way to benevolence. Masona Diewalwayu says that one kind deed is more beautiful than 1,000 good intentions. And he also says that your mind shines brightest when you enlighten others, your heart when you encourage others, your soul when you elevate others, and your life when you empower others. So there's this true story of a man who marries a woman, and then somehow her health starts deteriorating, and it gets to a point where he has to do everything for her, including bathing her, feeding her, nursing her, till she passes on after a few years. Is that benevolent love? What does benevolent love look like in its simple form and in its more complex form? That's what we want to look at and delve into. And it's been said that the passing of our late brother recently, he had to go through some health challenges, and his spouse donated a part of her for him. That is a higher form of benevolent love. What do you think? And so we're asking, how far should a spouse go for the other? How far should a family member go for the other? We've heard of parents who've donated their kidney or something for their child, or a child who donated a kidney or another body part where necessary for a parent, or a spouse donating for another spouse. The risk of going through surgery when you are well and fit just to save another. How altruistic can that be? And so we're going to delve deep into this conversation this morning. Benevolent love in relationships. And we would love to hear from you. So keep your comments, contributions, and queries coming on via WhatsApp or Telegram on 0549-986-996. Again, 0549-986-996. We'll open the phone lines in good time as well. Let's hear from you. Are you living a benevolent life? Do you sometimes feel out of order with it? Are you a receiver of benevolent love? Or are you, both of you in the union, showing benevolent love? Or is your family an altruistic family where benevolence is a key factor of it, or it's not? I'll begin with Elder Amos Kevinanan this morning, and then we'll begin to drill down. So please stick and stay, and let's hear from you as we do this together. It's been said that genuine love is characterized as benevolent. Love motivated by a desire to do what is another person's in another person's best interest without being poisoned by ulterior motives. I take it again. Genuine love is characterized as benevolent. Love motivated by a desire to do what is in another person's best interest without being poisoned by ulterior motives. And that is where we will want to begin. Good morning, my brother.
Morning, Mickey.
And how are you doing today?
Very well, though.
All right. Good to see you. You're looking sharp.
Oh, Charlie.
I like your talk, too.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's one of those gifts from one of the generous givers.
it's nice. I like it. It's nice.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So, yeah, here we are today. We are looking at benevolent love. What does that word mean to you? And what influence do you think it has in any given relationship to start with?
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. When the topics were sent, I was just thinking of one of our retreats, one of our couples retreats, which the theme was altruism, adventure, acceleration and adventure, the three A's. And this altruistic trait and tendency was discussed by a couple who were then pastoring a church in the United States, Rob and his wife, Singleton. Now, they helped us to appreciate the concept of being selfless in a self-preoccupied world. You know, we live in a world where people are quite conscious of themselves and what can accrue to them. But if you talk about benevolent love, it's love that is aimed at ensuring that the other party, their well-being and their living conditions are not jeopardized.
Okay.
And there are words like philanthropy and all those things that are all part of these benevolent traits. So a person who is going to practice benevolent love must, from the word go, come to a place of accepting that they are going to be charitable, they are going to be benign, they are going to be persons who have to show kindness, they are going to have to be good people, they are going to have to show humane tendencies or traits, and that's very important. And anyone who is unable to show forth these ones cannot be said to have practiced the tendency or the trait of benevolence. But whilst I was driving here, just when I got to the traffic, a thought struck me, and it was this. You can be altruistic for your personal benefit, or you can be altruistic to bless the other party.
Yes.
So if you're benevolent, is your benevolence for yourself, or your benevolence is for the other party, without you looking for anything in return?
Yeah, so you know, let me read again the opening statement I read. It says that genuine love is characterized as benevolent.
Genuine love is
characterized as benevolent. Love motivated by a desire to do what is in the other person's best interest without being poisoned by ulterior motives.
So the issue is the ulterior motive.
Yes.
Now, in order not to also get into the temptation of reading too much into what people do, you don't have to always be checking what motives are. Otherwise, you yourself will be just feeding yourself.
So in this case,
the motivation must be with the person. They must evaluate. Why did I do this? Why did I go out of my way and my comfort or convenience to do this for the other party? Is it self-serving?
Yeah.
Or is it for the person?
Or is it manipulative?
Is it manipulative?
Or is it achieve a given purpose?
Yeah.
Or so does it mean then that it should be doing things that are worth doing for what is worth and possibly ending there?
And just leave it there. You've done good. I mean, I like it when Jesus says that let your good be spoken of by others.
But now we live in a world with all the social media dynamics where people want everybody to know what they have done, be it a kind gesture or a big one. People are giving their wives vehicles and they are making the whole world see, or they build a house for a sibling or a parent, and it's all on social media. Is that a way to go?
Well, I think the problem is not what is on the social media. Mm. It's what is driving your decision to put it on social media.
Mm.
You know, is it to inspire other people to do positive stuff?
Mm.
Or is just there to enhance your personal status? Because, for instance, you can buy a car for your wife,
yes,
and put it on social media, mm, just to make a statement for yourself. It's vainglory.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Mm.
Like the Tower of Babel. We shall build a name for ourselves.
Mm.
It ceases to be that which glorifies God.
Mm.
And so there's always a need for the person who is rendering these benevolent acts to always checkmate themselves. And so, if you're in the NGO field, you come across a lot of this. You go to a rural community, the people are so underprivileged.
Yeah.
And sometimes people take photos which are exploitative.
Yeah.
And yet they are having an activity that
is supposed to be benevolent.
So
that's what brings us back to what we are saying at first, that is it meant for you or is it meant to
meant for the other?
So that's where I was asking that. It may be some instances where you need to put it out to motivate others. But is it the case that particularly where there's no cause for reportage, that you still put it out, as it were, to get your vibes? And now with social media, people are doing all manner of stuff just to get viewership.
Yeah, viewership.
And subscriptions.
Yeah. So, and then also get some cash.
And get some cash. So is that not putting us under more severe dynamics?
I like something Will Smith once said. Mm-hmm. Will Smith once said that. No, it was Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. Well, Denzel Washington said that the fact that I don't put stuff on social media doesn't mean I'm not doing great things. So people should come to a place of understanding that first and foremost, if you're putting something on social media, it's not a bad idea in itself.
Mm-hmm.
It is what motivates you. Are you putting it there to compete with other people? Are you putting it there just to gain traction? What is your motivation? You know, because the social media can do social good as well. And the social good will be inspiring stories.
Okay.
So, for instance, I posted a picture of a man who was carrying the child at the back and then walking side by side with his wife from the farm.
Okay.
And I was a bit pushy on that, and I asked the question, why is this man's photo not on the media platforms? If this same man had hit his wife, it would have been on every media platform.
Okay.
Made the headlines. So it's about what is motivating us to do what it is. So if you have the mindset that only negative things must sell, must be told to the world, that's what will happen. But if, I remember many years ago, our church, for instance, had done so many social work, not a single publication on it. And because people didn't know, they said, but if you're doing good, we should know. And then the theory at the time was, when you do good for the right hand, don't let the left hand know.
Yeah.
And that's the older generation of leadership.
Mm.
But the current generation realized, no, the fact of we not talking about what we are doing, which is for social good, makes people think that we're of no use. So now you may run into a temptation where you go into overkill.
Exactly.
So it's a tricky invitation, but this is where discernment is required.
And caution.
Exactly. You proceed. Yeah. You err on the side of caution. So I think that everyone out there who has done a benevolent act and you want to publicize it, you must be careful with the crafting of the text around it. Because the picture may speak 1,000 words, yes, but the words also will reveal the heart of what you have done.
Exactly.
Is it just to enhance your personal status?
Yeah.
Or it is to inspire other people. You know, for me, I think the inspiration bit is something we are also losing out in the social media conversation because many people, I won't say everyone, but many people talk down at the social media. So it's like it's of no use. But it has great dividend. I mean, for me, sitting here, I've seen how I have been impacted by posts by other people which are benevolent acts.
Yes.
And it's not like one who is just flaunting their wealth or flaunting what they're doing for other people and just capitalizing on that and running to the bank to cash in. Because there are people who are doing that. So if it's not your motivation, let's grant you. But at every material moment, I think that the individual in their quietness should ask themselves, is it for my personal benefit or is it to build or bless the others?
Yeah.
And like you said, you do it and leave it there.
Yeah. Papa Sil, good morning.
Good morning, Papa Miki.
So let me read this also. It says, love is the benevolent intentions and actions towards another. It is the wishing and doing something good to another. It requires the feeling of empathy, compassion, caring, altruism, and sometimes abnegation, renunciation, or abandonment of self-interest. Scripture says, love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud, it does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Is that an easy reality, Papa Sil? So the voice you're about to hear is the voice of Mr. Sylvester Sagbaya. And I'll introduce them better as we go along. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much, Miki, and good morning to everyone listening to us this morning. Well, I mean, I think you actually almost answered the question, whether it's an easy one or not. Mm-hmm. It, you know, when you ask a question like that, it's almost like, I know this is not easy, but you tell me what you think. You know, and that's the reality. Nothing good comes easy, you know. As you read, I was like, it always protects, it always what gives, and all of that.
Honest,
you know,
that keeps no record of wrongs.
Right, keeps no record of wrongs. Mm-hmm. These are not things that naturally come to us. Mm-hmm. Human beings are naturally selfish, they say, you know, but transformed hearts can learn to do things differently. And maybe one day we must actually debate whether human beings are naturally selfish. Yeah, because sometimes things get said so often that you end up concluding that they are true, but they may not be true, you know. Yes, maybe a few people do it and they are the ones in the limelight, so everybody concludes that this is what human beings normally do.
Okay.
So, generally showing love and benevolence are things that innately we as humans desire. We want people to show us love. We want people to be kind to us. We want people to be generous towards us. We want people to tolerate us. We want people to give us emotional support when we're going through hard times. Mm-hmm. We want people to be patient with us when we are being unreasonable sometimes or not considerate, you know. And so we also need to consider the fact that whatever we want people to do to us, it's good to give that same thing to others, you know. And that's the world we must create for ourselves. And these are things that you must deliberately work at. Okay. It's like building a house. You don't wish it into being. You buy your blocks, you put one block on top of the other over time till you get to your lintel level, then you go higher, you roof it, and all of that. It takes time, it takes effort, it costs you something, and you must plan for it, you must prepare for it, you must work at it. If you don't, it won't come easy. Even when you plan and prepare for it, it doesn't come easy. So showing love, being benevolent, doesn't come easy, doesn't come naturally. You know the expression, blood is thicker than water.
Oh.
You know, as Opaimos was speaking, I was thinking of it. Okay, so in a family relationship, there are multiple dimensions. So you and your spouse, then you, your siblings, your parents, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people put this question out a few times in different spaces when your mother and your wife are drowning, who will you rescue?
I mean, I think I saw one time this
yeah.
time what is,
yeah.
Papa Yangtze also.
You know, I mean, ideally, we should be ready to rescue anyone who is drowning, mm. you know, whether they are your mother or your spouse or anybody at all. As long as you have the capacity and the ability to rescue that drowning person, you should. Why not get drowned? And there's a story told about this guy who was, I don't know whether he was on a flight or on a ship, and then wherever it was a flight, I think it was a ship, and then the ship got wrecked somewhere, and the passengers on the ship were drowning, and then there was a helicopter that came around to rescue. Mm-hmm. He knew how to swim, mm-hmm. and they were in dead cold water. So he made every effort, grabs somebody, pulls him to the rope that pulls them up or hoists them into the helicopter. Mm. And then they hoist the person up. Then the next person, the rope comes down again. He pushes the other one onto the rope, manages to get the person hold on. The person is hoisted up. So he did that for about almost everybody that was on that small boat. And then, because the water was very cold, he finally kind of just gave up. He got frozen and he died. Wow. So the one who was telling the story, and I'm told it's a true story, I think the next time I'll have to find the source and come share it, you know, was saying that what motivated this man to sacrifice so much, you know, one, he considered the vulnerability of the others in the water. The fact that they could not swim and they were at a higher risk, he probably may have considered himself and said, well, if I have the ability to do this, why don't I do it? Because others may not be in the position to do it. So he selflessly volunteered, did this at the peril of his own life, and eventually lost his own life. Mm-hmm. But he saved many. He could have chosen to be the first person to hold onto that rope
and
he's gone. And then the remaining 7 or 10 he rescued would all have perished.
Yeah.
But he rescued these ones
and
perished himself. So cultivating a mindset of looking out for the greater good makes us develop benevolent love.
Okay.
If we do not reflect on it, consider it, see what the greater good is and what the big outcome there is to it, it's always easy to go the easier way or the selfish way. This is good for me. I want it. Let me have it all to myself, you know. But, I mean, you talked about donation of organs. Donation of organs is not an easy thing, you know. Even blood donation, you know. I mean, some people don't believe in it, but blood donation saves lives. You know, somebody needs that pint of blood to make it. It makes the difference between life and death, literally. So if you can give it to save a life, it makes sense to give it. If you are not in the position to give it, that's fine. I mean, everybody understands, you know. So it's important for all of us to consider the fact that, one, within a family setting, being benevolent helps the family do better. Within a community setting, being benevolent makes the community better. And like Papa Imo said, doing that thing, doing that act of kindness, performing that act of sacrifice, being patient when everybody expects you not to be patient, teaches others a lesson, helps others appreciate the fact that, well, this man did it, this woman did it, why shouldn't I also do it? And I think that's the positive side to whatever people showcase that we must all pick and apply to ourselves, whether it's in the news or on social media, or you just observe it, you know, we must learn from it and say, this is good. This is something I can also learn and do. It will make the life of another person better. Mm-hmm. It will make the well-being of another family better. Mm-hmm. It will change the destiny of somebody. Mm-hmm. And my doing it may take a little from me, mm-hmm. but it does not bring the world to an mm-hmm. end for me.
Yep.
Awesome.
That's it.
You know, as you're talking, a picture just flashed my mind and I have a smile on my face. There's this clip in the rounds where this guy goes and knocks on the door of a man. The man comes out and then he's holding a 5 kilo bag of rice. And then he's giving it to the man. And he calls his photographer to take a shot. have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so then the guy says, excuse me. Then the guy goes back in. Then he comes back wearing a suit. And now he comes to town on the left side. Then he holds it. Then he holds the thing as if he's the one.
He's the one donating it.
Then tell the guy to take the picture.
Now take the picture.
Then after
right?
the guy takes the picture, then he takes the rice and he pushes the guy away.
Oh,
that's what we are trying to say. Was he doing it for his own sake or for others? And then speaking about the blood donation, it brings me to something that happened. You know, my mom, once, my late mom, I call her EIIP, among other things. I said that she had everything in this place. And once she was taking a stroll to buy her, what do you call it, cosmetics from where we lived, just a walking distance, FC Perfumery.
Oh, yeah, FC.
So imagine you are in town one Saturday afternoon around 3 p.m. and then you get a call from Accident Center, Kolebu. Your mom is here. So now that's the story. So now she's going, and the next minute she realizes she's been hit and she's under a vehicle.
Wow.
Elena driver jumps the gutter and hits her.
Mm.
The whole process meant she going through surgery, needing blood, and she's rated negative. So at the point she needed 3 pints of blood. They could only get it in social collaboration. She had it. They had to try and get some from 37 or whatever.
Right.
In the end, they were only able to get her two pints of negative and added 1 pint of positive.
Wow.
Later on, she needed some again. I share the same blood group with her. So when we're not getting, because you know, this is 10% of the population.
Yeah.
I was told that they normally don't do that. So I got colleagues to go and donate. But now they still are not getting a negative. So they said then they will process my blood and add it to her. So like you're saying, being altruistic or showing kindness can make a lot of difference in life and death,
it
you
does.
Get me? And that changes the whole dynamic.
It does.
So generally, let's, you know, there's this, you know, like I keep saying, social media is neutral, but how we use it makes it positive or negative. There are true accounts of people drowning and people being, you know, this
taking pictures.
Yes, taking pictures of a person drowning, so somebody who can seem going to save them. Because you see, we want to be, we have become like news channels. First to release the information. So you want to be the one to capture, there's an accident somewhere and people are in trouble, they need help. Instead of people rushing to help them, they are taking selfies, they're taking photographs and sharing that, oh, there's an accident, to be the first to you know. So there must be, in view of the new dynamic of being able to reach the world, we need to be cautious not to lose our self-consideration bit. And then to go a bit low on the element of degree of self-centeredness. I rather used to do that rather than selfishness. You get me? So now let me ask the other question and bring it closer to family and to marriage. How and what extent should one go for the other? Let's say a husband for a wife, or a wife for a husband, a spouse. In the event that you have been doing that thing for a long time and they don't seem to appreciate it or even take it for granted, must you continue to be showing that kindness, to be showing the consideration, to be continue to being empathetic, or you must also flex your muscle a bit and let him or her know that you've had enough of this thing, you have been overstretching yourself, overextending yourself to get a thing done, and he or she is not showing any form of mutuality in reciprocating what you are doing.
Reciprocity.
Yes. What should a person do who finds himself or herself in that situation? Like the songwriter said, in front to her, no, they are two. In front of her, she's always putting the things at the wrong place, or he's always putting it at the wrong place. He will leave his towel on the floor after a bad thing, and you have to pick it. And you've told him severally, you won't do it. He leaves his shoes anywhere around, or she keeps the kitchen unclean, and you mentioned, oh, can we tidy up, and she's not doing it. And maybe you've done it a number of times, and you think that, no, you're at your wit's end, you've had enough. What should the posture be?
Well, I always like to start from where you start as a couple. How did that journey start, you know? And it's important to understand that love relationships demand sacrifice. Many times we do not want to think about that, but it's a very critical what we must consider whenever we're going into a love relationship, whether it ends up in marriage or not. And the sacrifice must come from both sides or both ends. You know the computer, they used to say that garbage in, garbage out. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he reap. I think that's the scriptural version of garbage in, garbage out. Yes, you know. So in whatever relationship you are, you find yourself in, you actually determine what the final outcomes are. Granted, we are different people. As we grow, we don't, our resistance to change increases. That's the reality. You know, we don't change that easily. So right from inception, the partners must build a relationship that is good for both of them. That's why in previous programs we talked about red flags, we talked about what makes a good relationship and all of that. You know, so for a couple that are together, one, there must be that understanding that you are married to a non-perfect person.
Okay.
As much as you yourself are not perfect.
Okay.
If I accept the fact that I'm not perfect, and my wife tolerates all my nonsense, excuse me to use the word, why should I not be ready to tolerate her shortcomings as well and to bear with them? Then, you see, it starts from that point, and then you both work at your shortfalls or your learning needs, you know, because we are all work in progress. So if you get to that point where you become so intolerant of the little things, and sometimes they're very, very little, you know, we talk a lot about toothpaste, whether you are squeezing it from the bottom or from the middle. You know, as my kids grow, I notice that there are some that love to squeeze it from the middle. I love to squeeze it from the bottom. So each time I see it, I go back and squeeze it from the bottom. You know, but we've not had the conversation. And I said to myself, yeah, it's okay to tell them, but really, what does it change? Whether you're squeezing it from the bottom or from the middle, you just want the paste out, isn't it? And does it damage anybody's life? If it doesn't, allow people to live their lives. You know, there are things that really don't hurt. And we must learn to gloss over things that don't hurt. There are things that don't cause any damage to anything, anybody, or whatever. Be blind in one eye. They say the happiest couples are those who are blind in one eye. You don't see everything and say, I've seen it. You don't see everything and decide that I will talk about it. I must straighten this thing up. I must change this thing. You'll be a very miserable partner.
So are you saying that you have to develop the posturing, if you don't have it naturally, of overlooking some things?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. It's extremely important for anybody who wants to be happy. Otherwise, you die from a heart attack. You know, and that's not to say that encourage and tolerate bad behavior and bad conduct. You know, the other critical thing we've always spoken about is communication in a relationship. Good communication has good repairing effects. It has, sorry, get you some water. Yeah. It has a way of making people reflect on their lives, reflect on what they do, how they approach things, and take critical decisions, either to make a turnaround or to improve on what they do and who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who does not reflect is not living a life worth living. You need to stop and think about how you live.
So let me push you further. But let me announce so that people can send their messages. So you can get to us with your comments, queries, questions, and contributions via WhatsApp or Telegram 0549-986-996. Again, 0549-986-996. So the question I want to ask is this. What if one party is not doing the introspection you're talking about, and the other party feels that I am doing everything?
Yeah.
And acknowledge I'm not perfect, and I'm a work in progress. And because of that, I'm willing to be a better version of myself.
Right.
I'm engaging. But he thinks that he's incorrigible. Or right. She thinks that she's incorrigible. That any and everything in the marriage is me. Maybe there's not enough money. And I should go and look for enough money. If I don't have enough money, then Yamutu.
Mm-hmm.
Or I should keep the home in this way. If I'm not doing that, how do you manage a spouse? How far can you go with your benevolence?
Right.
If he or she is one adamant to a very, what's the word to use? The person is quite acrimonious,
okay.
And then three, the person is unrepentant, and four, the person is arrogant, and then five, the person is adamant.
Right.
So that all the good you are doing seems like pouring water on the duck's back. How should you proceed in such circumstances, where, like you said just before, consideration, weighing the matters, reviewing, introspection, but in the event that the other is not doing it and one person is doing it, what must the posturing be?
Yeah, Mickey, that's a difficult one.
Mm.
And I mean, and we do have a lot of such situations in relationships where one person is bending over all the time, one person is doing all the sacrificing, one person is the one doing all the good, and the other person is a happy spectator, or sometimes not just a happy spectator, a destructive participant, because as you are doing all the building, every now and then the person appears, comes to pull down everything you are building, and you have to start all over again, you know. For people like that, they need help, and I'm sure if Doctor was here, he would have talked about the different kinds of people and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people, and you know, we all have our shortfalls in varying degrees. There are people that, you know, if I'm sick and I don't acknowledge I'm sick.
Yes.
I'm
double sick.
Not only am I double sick, I'm at risk of losing it all.
Okay.
You know, and unfortunately, that's the situation in some of these relationships, where the partner that is not responding, the partner that is giving the other half a hard time, the partner that's not contributing in any way to make the home a happy place, always feels like, well, take it or leave it. This is what I am. People like that need a lot of help, you know. And sometimes I tell people all the time, who does this person listen to? Who do you have you identified as somebody he respects or somebody she respects? Can you just get that person to engage him? Can you get that person to engage her? You know. Where they say that there's nobody, doesn't listen to anybody, then that gets scary.
Yeah.
But usually, there's always somebody that they would listen to, overtly or covertly. I mean, they would openly acknowledge that, oh, as for this guy, I really respect him. Whatever he says, I reflect on it. Find that person and see whether you can get that person to engage and give that this recalcitrant partner some guidance. Now, you, the partner at the suffering end, I'm using that word or that expression advisedly, you must consider the fact that you may be there also to bring a change. And sometimes changes don't come that easily. Mm-hmm. Last week's program, you dealt with learning needs, children with special needs.
Yeah.
If you have a child with special needs, some improve over time. There are some that you're going to live with the whole of your life, and you must adjust your circumstances to accommodate and support them effectively all through. You don't get to the point where you say, well, I've helped you up to this point. Oh, my children must leave home at 25 or leave home at 22. Mm. If you won't leave home, I'm gone. It doesn't work that way.
Okay.
You know? So if you can accommodate a special needs child, you, the spouse or partner, must consider the troublesome partner, a special needs partner, in this case, where you are providing therapy over the long term, you are providing support over the long term. It's more difficult because sometimes this person comes back to hurt you.
Yeah.
This person comes back to frustrate you. Mm. Sometimes the person sets you up and makes you feel very unwanted.
Mm.
You know, and it's such a very difficult one. My recommendation, as you know from previous conversations, is that when the partner becomes a threat to your life, seek shelter, seek help, find a place where your life is not endangered. If the partner makes your life miserable, get the help that will guide the person. I mean, you are supporting. Sometimes we assume that this partner is not seeing the good I'm doing. Sometimes they see it and they pretend, you know, and they know that the day you pack out, they're in big trouble, you know. And I've seen cases where the guy was giving the woman a hard time. The lady packs out and he now starts sending messages. Come back home. I'm really sorry. And all of that. She comes back and he starts the trouble again. You know? But he really knows that he can't do without her. She's very supportive. You know, so sometimes it takes time and we must just be prepared for that. Other times you get one or two people to talk to them, they respond and it's great. You know. But being benevolent demands sacrifice, demands patience, demands a lot of things that are not very easy to give. And in relationships, we must tell ourselves that sacrifice is critical and it's part of it.
In relationships, we must tell ourselves that sacrifice is critical and it's part of it. If you are just joining us, this is Farm Life, your regular family engagement program, live here on CTE 97.3 FM. I'm in the studio with Mr. Sylvester Segbaya and Mr. Amos Kevin Annan, and we are discussing benevolent love in relationships, especially marriage and family. We've looked at seven dimensions and dynamics already. So before we go for the break, I want to ask Papa Amos, how should one survive in the event that what your spouse is doing to you is hurting you? And Sarah just said we should overextend. So you are doing the overextension, but you are dying slowly inside. How can you avoid that? How can you thrive in the midst of adversity, in quotes?
I think that before I come to the thriving in adversity, I shared some scriptures this morning. These motivates me not to give up on doing what I know would benefit others, not necessarily me. The first one is Galatians 6, 9 to 10, where it reads, "And let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially those who are of the household of faith." The second one is Ephesians 4:32. And he says, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you.
Okay.
You see, if you're doing something to be thanked, if you're doing something to be noticed, if you're doing something to be celebrated, when these things don't come, you get disappointed.
Okay.
But if you're doing something and you know that you're doing it for God's glory, you don't pay attention to what they said thereafter.
Okay.
You know, I went to the oncology department at Kolebo and visited the Sunshine Building, which had been put up by the First Lady. Yeah. And I saw mothers, like he was describing, who have left everything because their children are cancer patients going through therapy. And you see these children. My heart just missed the beat. When I saw these little boys, there's a doctor friend of mine who lives in the U.S., and her birthday, she decided to bless every child in the oncology department, including those in the Sunshine Hostel. And because she's not here, I had to stand in and go and do the donation. Now, we set the time to do it at a certain time, and then the guy who's to facilitate came late. And then those with the gift we're going to give came like 1 hour late. I was sitting in my car, my engine was running, and then they came to me and said, oh, are you not worried? I said, no, I'm here to do service. I'm here to serve these. It was a holiday.
Okay.
I left it. I blocked that day to do this. And I have to make sure I keep my heart clean.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's not just me being there. It's the state of my heart.
Yeah.
The heart of the matter is the heart. You know? And so people who are doing good, and it appears those you're doing are unappreciative of it, keep going. Keep going.
Keep going.
You see, again, the popular opinion is that if you do good and they don't appreciate, stop it.
Stop it, yeah.
That's not Christian response.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, the last couple of weeks I've been interrogating an idea that if you give a woman a sperm, she gives it this. If you give it this. And I'm asking, is it a Christian response? It's not. If you checkmate those theories side by side with scripture, you realize that we've been damaged.
are we damaged goods?
our psyche.
Our psyche has been
terribly damaged by these slogans because they rhyme.
Yeah,
you know.
And you know the danger about those things is that it seeps into your subconscious.
Yes. Like this, and blood is thicker than water. Yes, so, man, I know people who believe it so.
So before you are aware, you may be behaving in a certain way that is motivated by thing which you are not even aware of.
At all. So anyone who is going through turbulence, I remember I did a session for Jospon Group at their International Leadership Conference on Thriving Through Turbulence. And one of the things I did was to put an airplane going through turbulence on the screen. Whenever an airplane is going through turbulence, you hear that the pilots assure us.
Yes.
I was just watching my senior, Kwenu, you know, who flew in the big Emirates aircraft. I'm so proud of my senior. He's an Oberimaba. He's a Sectekan.
Okay.
the biggest aircraft that ever entered this country.
That came to a country.
Yeah, he's on CCTV now. And he's on CCTV now.
Oh,
yeah, okay. He's been interviewed. Now, and I look at the airplane, and the pilots give us the assurance that, we are going to experience some turbulence, but be assured that we are in control.
Yeah.
And everything will be under control. And I'm like, hey, Charlie, you people.
Serious confused.
You give us some assurances that...
You know, but you be confused because in the absence of that, they'll be curious.
And they need you to be calm for them to be in control.
So talking about turbulence, Mickey, there are different kinds of turbulence, different degrees and intensities of turbulence. That's what I've seen. My longest turbulence was across Sahara Desert. Where in the KLM flight, they didn't serve us our meal. They didn't.
Can't serve you.
And you couldn't move.
Wow.
You should see everybody sitting still.
Frozen.
And this one is looking at that one. Some may have said their last prayer.
Could this be the end?
You know? And so, when...
They say that death itself is not frightening as the president,
and then when they gave the indication, the signaling that you can now
the washrooms were besieged.
They were besieged, so they started making the announcement. Everybody, please go back to your seat. We are all on one side.
How do they go back?
Go back to your seat, Charlie. Call somebody, need some medication. You know? Yeah. So when we came to Accra, we all heaped a sigh.
Oh, yeah.
But 2 weeks after, I was going to speak at CCC Kumasi and on the flight. You know, it's just a 30-45 minutes flight, and the pilot told us, as we did those, so that's when they usually do those announcements, we're going to experience turbulence halfway the trip.
And then your mind went back to the Sahara Desert.
You know, because of turbulence on this local flights.
A lot of people are afraid.
A friend of mine who had a drive to Kumasi.
Tell him it's safer up there
on the ground. You know? You know, so there was this lady sitting next to me. And she says, "Are you not worried?" And I said to the lady,
"You have no choice."
I said to the lady, "If you frown, it won't change the turbulence. If you cry, it won't change the turbulence.
So relax, eh?
Relax, because you're already in the sky. 16,000, 18,000, 22,000. What are you
going to
do?"
Some people are more rational than emotional.
Emotional, yes,
instead
I know.
We have the rational mind, the emotional mind, and then the bridge is the wise mind. So moving from one to the other sometimes is not that easy for us.
No.
Yeah.
So
but please keep your thoughts.
So what I did, let me just close on this. You know, I shared my experience on the Sahara Desert. And when I said, "So I understand why you are so calm." I said, "This one."
It's a minor.
So when you're going through
baby.
Turbulence, you must remember that others have gone through some turbulence, but they have rebounded.
Yeah.
And usually, going through the turbulence is not the issue. How to develop resilience to rebound. So we'll talk about that.
Yes. So the question people ask is, why me? On which note we'll take a break.
But as a why not me?
We are live here on Farm Life.
Why not you?
We are live here on Farm Life, your regular family enrichment program, live here on City 97.3 FM. And we're going to take a short break, but you can keep your comments, queries, contributions coming via text or WhatsApp, or Telegram on 0549-986-996. Again, 0549-986-996. We'll take a short break and then we'll be right back. Please stick and stay.
The city is alive on 97.3.
Chances to do what is right. souls have parted to eternity. Souls are parting as we live today. Souls will
welcome back, and we're having this wonderful conversation on benevolent love in relationships, especially marriage and family. And with me in the studio is Mr. Sylvester Stegbaya, a public health practitioner, a pharmacist, husband, father of six, and many other wonderful things he does, and Elder Amos Kevinan, CEO of Hearts and Habits Foundation, and counselor, and many other wonderful things. This is Live here on Farm Life, your special program live here on Saturday mornings between the hours of 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. here on CTFM. And we're always glad to come your way, and that motivates us to keep doing what we do. Is it benevolence? Because sometimes it's not easy. Waking up and coming, sometimes you have to make big sacrifices to be here.
When your bed is calling you,
I tell you, but it's worth it for the good of what it is.
Totally
worth it. Yeah. So thank you for allowing us into your space. And please keep your comments and contributions coming via WhatsApp or Telegram on 0549-986-996. And we'll be glad to share with the rest of the world. Let me take a few then, and then we'll get into drilling down on how to... Yes. So Yao at... Takwa says, my partner, so please take note so that we can, maybe I'll take a few, then you respond to them later. My partner has very bad table manners. She chews bones, then spits it out on the dining table. I have complained several times. What should I do? So this is spitting bone. Excuse me. Yeah, forgive me for laughing. I'm sorry about this situation. So yeah, it's concerned. She says, what should you do about his wife, who has, in his opinion, bad table manners, spits bones on the table. Then worried lady says, good morning, Farm Life family. How do you overlook infidelity? After getting someone to engage him and he tells you he's not the only married man cheating. So you get someone who can engage him, like Slay was saying, and the person engages him and he says he's not the only one cheating. So now, Amos is looking, is your statement in another way, that you're not the only one suffering. He's just saying he's not the only one cheating. Now, Ray, so that's the second one. And then the third one, then I'll pause there, then you can answer. Ray from Accra says, good morning. Hey, Ray, that's my brother's name as well. Good morning, Farm Life. And interestingly, my niece is married to a Ray. Good morning, Farm Life. I'm a bit worried. My dad has been living outside the country. Outside the countryside for more than 30 years. And I met him for the first time when I was 16 years. He hasn't been taking care of us. It's been my mom and my big brothers all this while. Fast forward, my stepmom came to Ghana and saw my transcript. And I think
it's outside the country.
My stepmom came to Ghana and saw my transcript. And she was impressed, so she has managed to secure admission for me in a school outside. The problem is, my dad thinks my stepmom is having a secret relationship with me. He doesn't understand why my stepmom is so interested in my well-being and wants to support me improve in life. So he's doing everything possible to cancel my move outside. Is it my dad supposed to show much love and care and see me grow in life? Wow. Can I add one more? Then I'll make it 4K. Ikuya Papebi from Akimoda. Nice one, Ikuya Papebi. Good morning. I had the opportunity to travel outside. I decided to show benevolence to my husband by swapping the traveling with him. This is because I saw that I was in the best position to take care of our three kids whilst he was away. Aside this, his friends outside are always on him, trying to let him join them to make his grass greener. But it seems traveling does not run through his blood. I'm always on him to do something about it. My question is, am I pushing him too much? Should I get worried over him not making the attempt? Thank you. That's from Equia Papebi from Akimodan. So please answer this, and then we'll come to the drilling down and being benevolent, and then we'll take some more, and then we'll open the phone lines as well. We'll be opening the phone lines soon, please. So please stay tuned. Yes, very much. So
well, I think that the table manners issue.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you have a side plate or saucer or something to take bones? If you have it at home, when you are eating together, kindly place it by the side. For starters. I mean, and show its usage as an exemplary husband.
Okay.
I think in this case, scolding and constant refrain will not help.
Mm.
They'll rather harden and create this rebuttal posture.
And I think that's a very important point, because sometimes when we feel frustrated about a particular behavior, we start scolding, we start calling names, crassing and things like
those
that.
Unsavory words.
That hardens the person, says, okay, now you've already defined me, you know, so it's important.
If you say this is who I am,
that's
let's keep it at that.
Yeah, so
that's a simple suggestion to start with. And then I think the rest can follow.
So then that was the infidelity bit.
Yes.
Do you think it would also be helpful for him to, if they are both techno-savvy, look for etiquette?
Yeah, etiquette. I mean there are a lot of videos.
And then show videos, yes. So that
if you have a smart television, all you need to do is
so that they can
you
learn.
Can watch. You can watch Food Channel, for instance. Food Channel, they do a lot of serving and all that. You just watch without making that's references. You see, the danger with this one is that you're watching and say, so I'm saying,
no woman wants a father and a husband. Neither does any man want a mother and a wife.
So I have a feeling we are missing a certain context here. He may not have shared it, you know, because
where it's coming from,
and all of that. You know, in addition
look
to
at
what
it,
you said, I was going to suggest that sometimes they should do it the way that we eat back in the village. If they have a backyard, they should sit in the backyard, eat, chew the bones, throw it out the way she wants to do it, so that she's happy that within a certain context,
she can be herself.
It's okay. She can be herself.
Okay.
But if we're
when
going
to the table,
do it at table, if we're going to go out, if we're going to host visitors, then it's important that we keep this kind of
etiquette.
Exactly.
Yeah, but because when you look at it, I mean, from the text, it shows
that
they
complained.
So it means that they are a couple who regularly sit together to eat.
Yes.
Right.
Because otherwise, you even notice this.
Exactly.
Or maybe you come and meet the debris on the table. Once you have that opportunity to do it, I think that if you don't have those additional tools to make it easy for it to be deposited in it, they will not form that habit. And like Tish constantly will say, do it over 21 days. And it becomes automated somewhat.
You know, what I often tell people, I remember once during a training, one wife said, one of the things that aches her is when her husband leaves the toilet seat up. And she was collaborated. I mean, she was supported by other ladies on that forum. So I asked them a question. I said, so in the event that you know that your husband is not feeling well, and you are nursing him, and then you step out, and then you come back and you see that his you see that the toilet seat is up, what would your reaction be? He said, oh, I overlook because I know he's not well. And I was even happy that he's able to even get up to go and use the washroom. So I said, yes. So our mindset has a lot to do with our posturing and how we handle the issues.
Yeah.
So if you can make room for him when he's sick, then make room for him when he's not sick and see it as his growth area. So in this case, see it as her growth area. that is where she needs some help on. Yeah. And then let your motive determine your method. If your motive is to help her change, you know, sometimes we say, he's not doing, but the real motive is that we just want to let her know how bad she is. Because if our motive is to let her be a better version of herself, then we'll choose the right, exactly. So it's a higher level on you being benevolent by supporting her through the process and then letting her understand and not being critical of her and seeing it as her growth area. Don't just complain, support and go along with her. That's what I was saying.
About 4 years ago, Doc shared something in one of our discussions when somebody talked about nagging. And he said that instead of seeing it as nagging, why don't you flip it around and see it as cry for help?
Right.
And you notice that instantly your response changes, like the example you just gave. So for me, constantly complaining about this particular thing, my strategy oftentimes is that if there's something that I complain about, 1, 2, 3, I would now have to take charge and fix it myself. So you be the example. And when you become the example, you inspire. Now, this thing of every man, he's the not alone. He's not the only one cheating. This thing has to stop.
It has to stop.
I mean, you go to meetings and women will ask you the question, why is it normal for men to cheat?
It's not normal.
It's not normal. Let's stop that. If people
some men cheat, but it's not normal for everyone to cheat.
If people go out of their safe zones and entangle themselves with this behavior, let's not normalize it. Because gradually, it's also being normalized on the side of the women also.
And
it's becoming scarier. I mean, because that one is submarine.
So that one is
underwater. And the sophistry with which the operation goes on, you need some real reconnaissance strategy to be able to snoop it. So I think that it is unacceptable.
It is unacceptable.
Don't find justification for it. If you fall into what the psychologists and psychiatrists would describe as accidental infidelity, don't stay in there.
Absolutely.
There are people who have strayed. I mean, those who are believers know that the scripture says if a person is overtaken by a sin, that means that they took certain things for granted. Yeah. They may not have been paying attention to the drift away.
That's right.
So those of us who are in a position to call this person to order should do that with grace. You know, so this sister, please, I don't know the help that was offered him and what he was made to know about the threat of infidelity, because at the heart of it is a violation of trust. And nobody promises anybody violation of trust.
Exactly.
So to that end, it's unacceptable to find excuse in what other men are doing wrong. If you find somebody doing wrong, you don't repeat the wrong. It has been famously said that if you don't learn from the mistakes of others, you then become their mistake in the current situation. So I don't want to be the mistake of somebody who I know was mistaken. Maybe I just touch on this father thing, you know. I don't know why.
Thinks that the wife
I want to be sure that he's not operating on an assumption of the father thinking the way he has described it. Because, you see, Tish would often say, validate your assumptions.
I think he now, made a categorical statement. It sounded like his father said it to the mother and the stepmom. You know,
and the stepmom might have given him the feet.
I may have told him because maybe.
So
something my question supposed is to do this: and he's not doing, and she said, "This is what your father says."
So, Mickey, this is where are we working together or we are working against each other?
This is
his son.
Yes,
you are a stepmother.
And she said she never saw him till he was 16.
Yes, but in any case, you are relating with his current wife, who is your stepmother.
Mother, yes.
Now, I'm asking the question. This is a father, no matter with all his faults. If you want to help his son as a stepmother, must you just take it upon yourself to do it? The two of you should be on the same page so that the child doesn't feel that one is against him.
No, Sudha, but that's what
so
you're saying.
This is what I'm calling for.
Yes.
That this gentleman should encourage the stepmom to make disclosures father. To his father. You see, otherwise, he's going to be laden with his own assumptions. I mean, unfortunately, he's not here that we can speak to. It's this young man, who are, brother of ours on the side there, who has sent a message. I think that if he can encourage, because you see, at the end of the day, no matter what the fault of the father is, you don't benefit when you pitch against him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are a male. One day, you'll be shocked that the very things that you contested in your father's way of relating with you
begin to manifest in your life.
And I've seen countless examples. You look into the mirror and you start looking like your father.
Yeah,
and that itself is a scare. Like,
How did I get here?
Yeah. So, have you seen a man with a bald head with his son by his side? And the son is also bald.
Oh, really?
His son is bald. The child was bald. The father has one. I'll share the picture with you. You know, so my plea is that at all material points, coherence and harmony must be something we put in much effort.
Mm.
So where there is some kind of discord, let's find the bridging, you know, gaps. Let's bridge those gaps. If we don't bridge it, we'll destroy our family setup.
So what will you say in the event that, like you are saying, you know, sometimes some people are difficult for various reasons. He already has a prejudice because he did not know him till he was 16. His mom was taking care. So there can be a prejudice playing out. Next the stepmom comes, and then maybe for whatever reason she sees the need, maybe she wants to be altruistic, she sees the need for him to be helped. So perhaps she goes back and says, let's get him to come. For whatever reason, maybe he's rather punished for, I'm not saying it is, it could be that he's also deflecting his pain on the wife, on the children. So perhaps he doesn't want to have anything to do with the advancing of the children, because maybe he was angry. Perhaps, it's not he who broke the marriage, maybe the woman who broke it.
Right.
And so he's embittered. So he's punishing the wife to the children. So that's where the issue is. It doesn't always mean that maybe the man is right, but how can they, like you're saying, manage it such that he doesn't lose the opportunity if he can't get it to improve upon his lot?
I saw a post of a wife about her late husband. Now, the husband was quite a handful. I mean, he was all over with anyone that you can imagine. But the woman posted something, a line in the statement on her post said, how I wish you were alive to cause me trouble.
Oh, wow.
Wow. To make me cry.
She got used to the trouble and the crying.
Not necessarily so, but you see, the value of a soul is profoundly appreciated when they are lying on their deathbed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so this was in her tribute.
Yeah, in a tribute.
Right.
And she had posted it on her handle.
Wow.
I wish you were here in our usual fights. She narrated a lot of things that she wished now
he was
present to get her angry, you know. And when I read, I was like, hey, is this real or is this for the...
Well, are this to reflect for, and
for,
learn from
for us to suffer the weight of it? You know, so this is why I'm thinking, I've seen young people, young boys and girls, who, some of them, they saw their father at age 3.
Yeah.
The next time they saw them was 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have somebody like that. But you see, even though this person's mother said no, the sister said no, she wanted to respond as a Christian. And as a Christian, you can't respond in payback.
Yeah.
Because you will be the same person to go and quote and say, vengeance is God's.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite scriptures is Proverbs 17:13. It says, if you repay good with evil, evil will never leave your house.
From your home.
So there's a need for each one of us to be very careful when we feel offended by the actions of others.
Yeah.
Now, this brother, I want to plead with you. You are not cheating with her. You are not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
My mom, when she was alive, would often say, Kwame, ma won come on, yeho.
Yeah.
You see, you need to make sure that in your heart of heart, this is not happening.
Yeah.
And let whoever thinks whatever, but keep your conscience clear. Because the biggest accuser is the conscience. And that one you can't hide.
You can't hide.
You know, so how do you get your mother, your stepmother, to win together with all of you? Because for me, there's something to begin.
Yeah.
If your father dies right now, look, everything you are doing, you even forget of the hurt he has put you through.
That's true. So then, okay. Oh, the last one.
Oh, Ikuya Papebi's story about encouraging her husband to travel. Do the trip. You know, I have a friend who says he doesn't like traveling. Anytime he travels outside the country, he loses his hair. Wow. And physically, weather. Okay. weather just makes all his hair go. And he doesn't want to travel. And I've met a lot of people who don't want to travel.
It's true.
You know, so Ikuya, don't give your husband pressure. Mm. If you still are interested in traveling, have a conversation with him and take the opportunity if it's still there. And you do the trip, go and come back if that is the compromise. Because if he doesn't want to go, he doesn't want to go. I mean, and traveling is no guarantee of anything anyway.
That's true.
If you have identified opportunities out there, you want to take advantage of them, no problem. Have a conversation and just make sure you have agreement on the issues, because sometimes people travel and the issues that come after that become so complicated. So that would be my advice on this.
Is it that he has... He won't fly. Some people too don't like to
fly. Don't like to fly.
I know somebody who will never fly.
There
was a sports guy a while back, one of the footballers in these leagues, who will never sit in a plane. I've forgotten his name. Those of you who are into sports. And he will always join his team by train.
Wow.
Yeah.
Definitely
I remember
he won't play outside the continent.
What do you do?
We have to open the phone lines. Please.
Add the turbulence thing.
Now let's start drilling down. How does one extend benevolence in a situation like this one? The guy says, "Hey, do we finish addressing the infidelity issue?"
No, I think Papa Amos talked about it, and I agree with Papa Amos.
We shouldn't accept that it's normal for men to be. And to show infidelity in marriage. It's wrong. My reference point is always your wedding vow, if you did take one. If you didn't sign up to be unfaithful, don't deal to your partner something that's you didn't bargain, she didn't bargain for, he didn't bargain for. If the two of you had a beginning that wasn't particularly good, put things right. Probably, I mean, and I've met people who, before they got married, they both were living just anyhow. So they went into the marriage knowing that, oh, this guy has two other girlfriends. This lady also has two boyfriends and all of that, you know. But once you get married, clean up the past and start on a fresh note so that you keep a healthy relationship. It makes all the difference.
Okay. All right, so let me take this. Then we let me take this too quickly. Then we'll drill down into how to survive. Good morning, Farm Life. I'm enjoying the topic this morning. I'm sending birthday wishes to my husband, Mr. Michael Anum of Police Workshop Kumasi. God bless him richly from a concerned wife. So, Mr. Michael Anum of Police Workshop Kumasi, your special loved wife sends you birthday greetings on this special day. And then Kweku from Abokobi says, good morning, Farm Life. I'm a bit teary this morning. I've been a Sunday school teacher for more than 10 years till recently. An issue happened in church, and an elder of the church who I respected so much and expected to handle issues very well told me, that stupid thing you've been doing. That really broke me, and I stopped teaching the kids. We don't do things to be appreciated, but sometimes certain things people say and do pierces their hearts and makes us to pull back. I just pulled back because everything I've done in the church has been labeled as stupid. In my primary school, Mrs. Zalin Lin, said Anthony. She said, stupid boy. Hey, we used to call her mama. We used to call her mama. She's darling Lynn.
Nika we gami olebone yo. Boo. You haven't had a teacher who give you boo, eh?
Good morning, Farm Life. Thank you very much for building up our family life strongly. I'm Charles, working in one of our security services. I'm legally married to a beautiful lady that I dated for about 3 years. My wife is so jealous that I'm not supposed to receive or call any other lady on phone or have anything to discuss with any other lady. Just after a year into our marriage, she packed off from her matrimonial home to stay with her mom on suspicion that I spoke to an ex-girlfriend. That was not true. For 2 years now, she has not returned. All efforts to bring her back is of no avail. We are blessed with a beautiful daughter. I don't have access to my own daughter, even though I monthly send money for their upkeep. I'm becoming fed up. Please, Farm, help. Very Farm Life, kindly advise me. All right, so who take that on quickly?
You know, somebody played a song and says, if you do good, you do for yourself. Mm. But if you're a Christian, if you do good, you don't do for yourself. Mm. You do for the Lord. Mm. Now, keep doing for the child what you're doing. Mm. I mean, don't look at what the mother is doing and be upset and say you would stop your responsibility. Mm. Now, whoever receives the money you've been sending should be able to facilitate the process of you reaching out to your wife.
No, maybe the wife herself receives the money.
Ah, so if she does, then go through the family. Because in our setting, a lot of the marriages are contracted with family involvement. So because of that, go to the family. Engage someone, or you can get somebody to go on your behalf. It doesn't have to be you. I mean, we have uncles, we have aunties, we have friends who can go as delegates on our behalf and make those inquiries. For you know, she's going through something she can't discuss, she can't describe. People go through things from time to time. And so don't take a posture of anger. You've got to take a posture of reconciliation, rather, so that you don't go with preconceived ideas about what she thinks or what you think of her. And then let's see what will come out of that. Yeah. Then the outcome should determine your next steps. Because you can't take decisions all jumbled together as one and then thrust yourself into it.
And the question is, what makes her suspicious? There are some people who are overly suspicious. Sometimes too. Certain things that we do,
we give them cause.
So it's good to revisit, get a third party. Definitely, you need a third party.
And without stigmatizing him, I mean, a lot of the people within the security services have had such issues. So people who are married to persons within that space tend to be very worried, overly worried sometimes. And sometimes there's no basis for the worry, really. It's just based on what they have been fed with.
Right.
They heard that so-and-so, those days like in Tema, see men, hey, the way they suffered.
He's away for 4 months.
Being away for that
and
long.
And then usually there's no communication especially those days.
So there's where the communication was. It was
a very difficult thing, actually.
So I will want him to, like you rightly said, he shouldn't give her cause to have those suspicions, because that will reinforce a mindset.
Because
already old school platforms are giving headaches already.
Seriously.
Hey, Charlie, it's breaking home.
Like momos and things that
Charlie,
are
the way they are ready, their head. You see, the thing is that they are chatting and then they say, hey, so you did. They chat you on the side, so you did. Then you should know that the cobra has just lifted the head. Philip is laughing.
For please, you are doing it for a right reason. So don't let someone's statement put you down.
I wanted to also highlight that, like Papa Amos said, if there was anything that was making her suspicious for a legitimate reason, he needs to tread cautiously. You know, there are people that they are with their wives, they get a call and they step out of the room. Or they are getting...
Some don't step, hello, hello,
You know, so there's coded conversation.
How can you?
And this, okay. How can you be on phone for 5-6 minutes? And the other one is the late night calls, yeah, you know. So things like that, you just got to be as transparent as possible, and especially the people whose partners cannot touch their phones. Yeah, you cannot be in a relationship and your wife cannot pick your call. Yeah, you know, it raises red flags. Yeah. I mean,
it's just a bit tricky because the security personnel. So
they respect your spouse. So there's an emergency, they call your phone, you're in the bathroom. Your wife should be able to pick the call and say,
why do you take the phone to the bathroom anyway?
Well, no. So what I mean is, the wife picks the call and says, sorry, he'll call you back in so many minutes.
Or who may I know? Who can I tell?
Exactly. And there's
some people, the way they ask the who.
Because sometimes
who is loaded.
Because sometimes it's an unknown number. So you need to know who the caller is.
Miggy, Orugono. Oh, yeah, why? Now, only know what business, man.
Men, friend, okay, so for Kweku, we encourage him not to give up and to perhaps find somebody to speak to that person who said that to you. Because it's helpful, scripture says that if you have an issue, find somebody to go and talk to him first.
Yeah.
If you cannot talk to him directly, find a third party to go with you.
Okay, let him know that's actually Charles.
Charles. So let him know that what he did hurt you and discouraged you. Perhaps he didn't mean it. Some people talk in quote loosely. I may not have meant it in the way you are taking it. So have it addressed so I can get back to doing the good thing that you are doing. Don't let his statement deprive you of the good work you are doing. So the phone lines are activated for a brief moment on 0302-230-075. Again, 0302-230-075 and 0302-224-959. Again, 0302-224-959. We are activated for just a few minutes, so please be quick and crisp and brief. Yes, Papa Amos, let's drill down on the issues of how to handle the turbulence, the pain, the discordance, the lack of appreciation.
I think that largely, with the turbulence, I was giving the aircraft example. Mm. Now, with the aircraft example, this is what I suggest people should look at. Just like the aircraft go through turbulence, when we're also traveling through turbulence, for instance, the aircraft, the pilot will start adjusting his navigation. Mm-hmm. The equipment he has to make sure he adjusts it so that he communicates with flight tower and all that, clearing a new route if he can, or he moves from that particular space. The pilot also regulates the speed. Now, the relationship you are in, maybe you are running very fast and you are not pausing. It's time to pause, reflect, have a conversation on the course you are pursuing. The pilot again realigns to direction. Here we are. Anybody who experiences turbulence shifts from normal trajectory. So that shift, how do we come back on course? Mm-hmm. You see? Mm. And most of the time, the complaints tend to be, you have caused us to shift. Mm-hmm. I will suggest you don't look at, you have caused us to shift. Mm-hmm. Something has caused us to shift. Mm-hmm. What is that something? Mm. Because that something is not a human being.
Can infidelity cause you to shift?
Exactly. Something.
External disrespect.
It could be disrespect. It's not
negligence.
You know, you are not paying attention to danger. Because people can be reckless, but you can't tell him you are reckless.
Mm.
Some too can be careless. Mm. You can't tell him you are careless. Mm. Because both recklessness, one is a bit of a contrived place. The other is that they are not paying attention.
Right.
Now, stabilize the altitude. That's what they do. They determine a setting that they want to stay on. Because if you keep going and coming, you have issues.
Right.
So what do you do to stay on course?
Mm-hmm.
It's so important as husband, as a family, because some families can be hit by a funeral and the whole family will disintegrate.
Yeah. Yeah.
One funeral.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you come back to a place of stability so that your wherever you had risen to, you don't lose what goes with that? Because you are at a certain level. Don't say country broke, country no broke, no day inside. Then, lastly, the aircraft would establish again equilibrium.
Yeah.
We should also learn to establish equilibrium.
Okay. Right. We have a caller on the line. Good morning, Samson from Sacramento.
Humphrey.
It's Humphrey. Okay, yes. Good morning, Humphrey from Sacramento.
Good morning. Yeah. I'm enjoying your discussion.
Okay.
I think it's very, very useful for all of us. What I find the city husband response very, very repulsive. I mean, by his response, is he justifying what he's doing? And my point is that, I mean, you are doing something wrong, and then you feel like, okay, that's normal. So the point is that if the man don't see that what he's doing is wrong, how will he change, you know, so that there will be peace in their relationship? And I think we don't have to forget that everybody is going to stand before God to give an account of whatever they are doing. Our actions and inactions. So this thing that other men are doing is always okay for me to do it. I think it's not acceptable. So I think if that man is hearing, he must show remorse and then also turn around.
Amen.
Things that people are doing, he must know that there is action for what he's doing. And that is what I think I want to add or contribute to your discussion. Thank you
very much, Humphrey. We are grateful for your contribution.
You know, I'm glad these are coming from men.
Yes.
Because oftentimes, if the women take the charge to speak to these things, they get stigmatized and they get all kinds of attacks coming their way. So it's good that a man has actually called in to register this.
Yeah, so did you land? Yes.
Okay. Largely on the turbulence bit.
Okay. Yeah, so Sil, what do you think should be a posturing as we are beginning to gradually descend from a 40 feet height? What do you think should be a posturing of a family member or a spouse when it comes to benevolence? In the event that your spouse needs your support consistently over a long time, should you do it to a point and say enough is enough, or should you continue to do it where it is appreciated? And then we've already looked at where it's not appreciated. But in the event that it's appreciated, should you continue to do it because maybe you feel tired or you feel drained or you feel it's affecting you negatively? Perhaps maybe somebody has to do the school rounds or picking the children. And they think that their schedule, the traffic they are in, or maybe the other spouse lives closer or works closer and could be able to do the return trip. Should they continue to overextend themselves, or sometimes it's good to evaluate the situation and then, where necessary, make necessary adjustments?
There's something we call the changing scenes of life. You know, so many things happen as our relationships evolve. And the thing that one party is doing so well today, 3-4 years down the line, you realize that the other one has taken over and is doing even much more, you know. Again, things happen in life. So today you might have access to a lot of resources and you're able to do so much for the family. And maybe you think your partner is just putting 5% on the table, you know. And it's not all about money anyway.
Yeah.
The emotional support, the support in the house, support with homework, all of these things, you know, they all come together to make the family tick. So let's start by appreciating each other for the little things that everybody contributes. Many times we gloss over those ones. We focus on the small things that are irritating us, and all of a sudden they magnify. You know, and if you do a little bit of that in physics, you notice that when you focus on something, the lens on a particular thing suddenly becomes bigger and bigger as you zoom in. So shift your attention from those things that are irritating and ask yourself, is there something my partner does that I'm really excited about? Have I ever appreciated her for it? Have I ever appreciated him for it? Okay, today I'm going to send her a text message and say, thank you so much for the love you show to our children, for the support you give when I'm out of town. Anything. Thank you for the flowers you brought me the other day on my birthday. Thank you for the surprise you brought me in my office. Things that make people happy. And when we focus on them, it makes a lot of difference.
Good morning, Kwame from Asim. You're welcome.
Thank you. I have a little issue. My own is not marriage, but we are cohabiting and we have one child.
Okay.
And it's like the woman is worrying me to the extent that at times I've asked her to pack. But I feel like this is pathetic. There is time I apologize and ask her, but I think it keeps on repeating itself.
Yeah.
To go out, go and do whatever, come back, apologize, then I will forgive and those things. So to what extent can I say I'm overlooking those things?
Do you say
it's hurting me a lot.
Do you say she goes out to do whatever she wants and then comes back?
Yes, like okay, like she'll be going outside. She went outside two times, and she has a reason. She said she has a reason for doing this.
When you say outside, where is outside?
Are you saying she's having an affair?
She, yes.
Okay, then you both of you need help, particularly her, because what will make a woman go outside, as you put it? It will be good to get third-party person to find out what exactly her concerns are that made her do what she did. Sometimes, actually, people need a nature change. Sometimes it's not within people's own ability to do some things until they get a nature change and help. So it will be helpful to get her help and get both of you help. Because like you're saying, for how long? If the person, like, if you are listening, somebody says, other men cheat. So if you also think that other women cheat and that's their mindset, then it's going to cost you unlimited pain for a long time. So I would recommend that you get third party help, somebody who is competent enough to take both of you through and to help her move away from that behavior or habit to a more reliable one. Then you can go on to, as it were, take the next step.
I try getting people to talk to her, but I don't know, she's adamant.
She's adamant. So try and get a professional, not just people to. And later you can call the phone line again and ask for Papa sales number. He will support you with it. Okay, ask for Papa sales number. He will give it to you after. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was trying to get how long he said they had been cohabiting. You know,
so I think it's about 3 years or so.
Okay, so cohabitation comes with its own challenges as well. Yeah. You know, for the women, sometimes they feel they are not secure in the relationship. Yeah. And when there are issues about financial stability and other things, they begin to look out elsewhere. So for people that are cohabiting, I mean, if you can regularize your relationship into a marriage, whether it's customary or
ordinance,
do it. So once you tie the knots, there's commitment, you know, because the element of insecurity is real, especially for women who are there. The man can go out and bring another woman and he can say, well, I never married you anyway. And that becomes a problem. So it's that aspect also needs to be looked at very critically for persons who are cohabiting. And usually when the turbulence begins in relationships where there's cohabitation, it's more complicated because sometimes family intervention doesn't work. Sometimes people sign out even before they need to come to the point of making a decision to marry or not to marry. And usually by that time, they probably have one or two children, you know, the children get caught up in this unfortunate crossfire, yeah. And usually they are the biggest victims. So it's good to just tidy things up very early.
All right, thank you so much. And so we are going to touch down. What would be your final comments, Papa Amos, and then Papa Sil?
Well, I think if you are being benevolent, yes. Be a benevolent person. If you elect not to be benevolent too, then it means that you're one who is looking for benefits. Whatever it is, you must choose your path. And each of the choices come with real consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You should be ready to bear the brunt of what it brings to you. If anybody is being benevolent and your benevolence is not being rewarded or there's no return to that, keep doing it. Don't stay away from being benevolent.
Right. So what will be your closing comments?
Long-lasting relationships thrive on benevolent love.
Okay.
Don't expect a reward necessarily for the good you do, but do good at all costs. Do good.
All right. Genuine love is characterized as benevolent. Love motivated by a desire to do what is in the other person's best interest without being poisoned by ulterior motives. Do it for the right reasons and continue doing it so that your love life would work. On which note, I want to thank you so much for giving us room to come into your space. Thank those who called and all those who sent messages. We hope we've been a benefit for you and to you. This Farm Life, live here on City 97.3 FM, will come your way again next week. But we have a few messages to give out.
Happy birthday to Mama Dora.
Yeah, happy Mama birthday D. to you. Happy so today's Mama Dora's you. Birthday. So we say big happy birthday to you, Mama Dora. May the Lord bless you and increase you and continue to sustain you to do all the wonderful things that you are doing.
Yes.
You know, we love you to the moon and back again. You are special and you are an amazing woman
amazing
in many
woman.
Ways. And we doff our hats. We're not wearing hats this morning, but we doff our imaginary hats. We doff our imaginary hats to you. Keep on doing the good work and may God bless you. And also a happy, happy birthday to Mr. Michael Lagbell. How do you pronounce L-A-G-B-L-E? Is it Lagbell?
I want to think so.
Okay, so Mr. Michael Lagbell of the Assemblies of God Church, Abundant Life Branch, Hansonic Junction. May you continue to enjoy an abundant life in Christ from the PR class of 1998, then Ghana Institute of Journalism, GIJ. Mm. Stay blessed, Mike. So I'm going again. Happy birthday, Mr. Michael Lagbell of Assemblies of God Church, Abundant Life Branch, Hansonic Junction. May you continue to enjoy an abundant life in Christ from the PR class of 1998, then Ghana Institute of Journalism, GIJ. Stay blessed, Mike. All right. And the Ignite training is ongoing. We are going to add another touch. By popular request, we are looking at doing an event, an in-person event called the Ignite Experience on the 25th of May. It's in-person for singles and those courting. It's a hangout. We have sessions on very practical dynamics, what we call the flags of a relationship and stuff. And then you have the chance to meet new people. So you can WhatsApp 020-813-6943. Again, 020-813-6943. Say that I'm interested in the Ignite Experience, which is an in-person program on Saturday 25th of May, and you'll be told what to do to be able to participate. And also the Ignite training, the online one, is also ongoing for singles, those courting, and then for married couples as well. The same WhatsApp, the same number, is on self-awareness, relational improvement and enhancement, and being a better person so you can engage better.
Can I what's do up? A quick shout
yes,
out?
Yes, so what's up to the same number, 020-813-6943. Again, 020-813-6943. Not call, what's up? That you're interested in the singles and courting one or the one for married couples. And you'll be told what to do to be able to participate. Yes.
Right, so quick shout out to my only son, Emmanuel Kobe Segbaya.
Hey, Kobe.
22nd April was your birthday.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow.
God bless you. May you grow up to be an excellent man, a great godly influence on society. May you achieve all that you've dreamt about and more. God bless you.
God bless you, Kobe. Hey, Kobe. My guy. Incidentally, you know, 22nd was also Abigail Titilati's birthday, Goya,
right.
Fosin's birthday, and then Yakoba Abaka Godwin.
That's correct.
So, Charlie, big ups to all of you. And Kobe, have Yakoba a nice day. Amwa. Tell Daddy that I said, Daddy has to do a special show because I think you are in school. So, another you've come, Daddy has to do a special show power for your birthday. Let me know what Daddy did for you.
Right, do you have a birthday calendar?
And okay. I want to say thank you very much. I've been in the studio with Mr. Sylvester Segbaya, Mr. Amos Kevin Annan, and we've been able to produce by Philip Nilati and Nashika Caesar, with technical support from Daniel Squashy. My name is Michael Manson. Stay tuned for the big issue which is next, and do everything city. Thank you and God bless.
Same anymore. Christos me, I and Sempi. Things are not the same anymore. Christos me, why and Sempi.
Things are not the same anymore. Christos me, I and Sempi.
Things are not the same anymore. Christos me, I and Sempi. Ways to be successful, 13 ways to make much money, but the one way to make to heaven, preacher man, you don't preach about it. Last Sunday I heard you preach. I must confess I was confused. Was that church or Gimpa?
Hey.